Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cellular Healing TV. I'm your host, Meredith Dykstra, and this is episode number 206. We have our resident cellular healing specialist, Dr. Dan Pompa, on the line, and today we welcome special guest, Dr. Will Spencer. And Dr. Will is an expert on microorganisms and how they can affect our health for the better or for the worse. So we are going to delve into this really broad topic today and also share a lot of amazing take-home nuggets with all of you as well, on how we can optimize our relationship with the microorganisms in our environment. So before we jump in, let me tell you a little bit more about Dr. Will. Will Spencer, naturopath, vibrational medical science practitioner, diplomat of pastoral science, author, and researcher, is an advocate for nature. His work extends into multiple areas of investigative research and education regarding human and environmental health. Identifying and restoring the degraded conditions of natural homeostasis, most often due to industrialization and the misunderstanding of the importance of microorganisms. From the conviction that nature has evolved with an innate wisdom of energetic signatures influencing and interrelating with one another, forming a natural, healthy terrain of coexistence, Will believes all conditions of illness and imbalance are correctable through restoring the elements of nature's design. Will has successfully applied this. Will has applied this conviction successfully in his work, reversing and healing conditions of human health, animal health, plant health, including reversing the effects of genetic modification and increasing the nutritive values of food, reversing the many issues of honeybee health, restoring vitality to soils and compost, water purification, and air quality. So welcome, Dr. Spencer, to Cellular Healing TV. We're so excited to have you on and delve into this topic.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, you know, I have to ask the obvious question. I think, okay, how did you get into this, right? I mean, what's, give us a little bit on that first.
Well, how about the first 20 years of my life being very ill? Raised in northern Minnesota on a large farm. My father went from small farm to over 3,000 acres and took on an airplane and pesticides, you know, the whole, I got to get big or what is it, go big or go home. So anyhow, I was brought up on that farm with the chemicals and all the whole big agriculture through the 70s and the 80s. Wow. And I didn't get well until I left the farm. And so in 20 years old, I was introduced to Rudolf Steiner and the whole biodynamic conversation, and then herbs. And an old Indian friend of mine, a Vietnam vet, at the time I was on four different pharmaceutical inhalers and pills every day and a shot every week, and I had bronchitis and pneumonia and asthma and overweight and just, you know, over 75 food and environmental allergies and, you know, all not really liking life.
Yeah.
And he gave me this glass of tea, this cup of tea that smelled really bad. And he says, drink this. And I'll tell you, just wait. And in no time, your asthma, you'll be able to breathe without all that crap. So I drank that tea and it tasted horrible. 15 minutes, I took my first breath of air that I've never took in my life. And I haven't stopped since. I've been to natural health and looking for natural remedies since that point in time.
Wow.
Yeah, so how did you evolve into this topic of, you know, obviously microbiology, the microbiome, and even how it disrupts the energy and the energy of the cell? I mean, tell us how that took a turn.
About 15 years ago, I was introduced to a microbiologist at an event, and I was into agriculture at an agricultural event and got to be friends with him and a couple of other microbiologists since then. And they shared with me the importance of the microorganism and the multitudes of microorganisms and what our body depends on microorganisms to be alive. If it wasn't for microorganisms, none of us would be sitting here today.
Yeah.
We have more microorganism cells in our body than we do human biology in our body.
Yeah.
Our proper gene expression is dependent on microorganisms in our body. And without them, without the broad diversity of them, we can't live. And from that point, I was like, wow, you got me hooked. And then they began to share with me the importance of the broad diversity of microbes and how just about every illness in our body is caused by some kind of infection, which really an infection is an overpopulation of strains of microorganisms. And so, like, for instance, staph, strep, you've heard of that. It's like, ooh, that's bad, right? Ooh, you know, staph is bad. Well, we need staph and strep in order to even make most of our vitamins. Do you realize that? Or E. coli. E. coli is, we need E. coli to make some of our vitamins in our body, but when they're in a overpopulation, when they're when they've gone pathogenic, then they're harming us. Their metabolic processes now not just feed us, but they harm us. Mm-hmm. And so when people really understand from a natural standpoint that microorganisms are beneficial and harmful, depending on our state. One old-timer, an old-timer, I mean, just one of my dad's friends took me out into the woods, and we sat on a rock, and we were watching squirrels, and he said, hey, look at this tree over here. It's not even dead, and it's got fungus growing on it, you know, toadstools.
Well, can you hear me, Meredith?
Yep.
Did he freeze?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep.
And
you froze there for a minute, Mike. I'm sorry, Dr. Will, you froze there for a second. More than a second.
He had said he was having some internet issues.
Must be. Are we still here?
Okay, there you are. Okay. We can cut this out of the broadcast. So if you just want to kind of pick back up
make sure everything is off, Will. Make sure, like, your bar is clear except for this show. You know, just X out of everything is what I'm saying.
X out of everything. Okay. I can do that. Ready? Okay, there we go.
Okay, so we can cut all of this out. I don't know. I know you were talking about the benefits of E. coli, and, you know, the problems is when, you know, these microorganisms go pathogenic, but I'm not sure exactly where it cut off, but maybe just kind of, if you want to start around there, and then we can kind of just, we can fix it. Now you're logged in twice.
Uh-oh.
That might be part of the problem, though, Meredith, because
I see two of you, Dr. Will, in the lower right corner.
How is that? I don't even know how that can be.
Microorganisms. I'm gonna get a glass of water while you guys.
That's strange. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know. I don't know why that would be. I mean, you could log back out and log back in if you want. Will Spencer blocked Will Spencer. Do you want to block Will Spencer as well? No.
Does that happen? What's that? That didn't X out or something, did I?
I don't know. Like, a little box came up that you had blocked yourself, but
I have no idea how I did that.
Oh, technology. Well, do you just want to, we can kind of just pick back up where you left off. I mean, I think it's okay. That mm-hmm. other one's just frozen, but we can just kind of pick back up where you left off if you just want to kind of continue answering the question.
I would honestly, Meredith, I would have him log out completely of everything and then log back in. I think.
And redo the whole thing?
Maybe, because I think that's going to suck the internet down for him.
Oh, really? Okay. I can do whatever you want. I can log out and log back in. That's fine.
Okay. All right. We'll stay on and wait for you.
Okay. I'll be back in just a minute then.
Okay. Thanks. You see, his other avatar is still there. I don't know what that is.
To block out of that.
I'll just.
I want to give people a reason, a why that this show is going to help them? So how can, what's a good question to start with?
Well, I think, I don't know. Should I eject that other one? I don't know. Well, I think, I mean, it's cellular healing TV. So people are watching this to want to know how to better their cellular health. So it's like, so how do microorganisms affect our bodies for better or for worse? How do they affect our diseases? Can, you know,
there, Michael, Michael, I keep calling Michael because I was just speaking to Michael on the phone. Will, are you there?
I am. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay. And now the other one disappeared. Yeah. So I think we're good.
Okay. So Meredith, it's up to you. Do you want to start again or do you want to pick up where he was?
Can you just patch it back in and later?
I think we, yeah. I think we can patch it back in. So I think it should be okay. So if you just kind of want to continue where we can cut it off where, because I remember you were talking about how microorganisms, you know, being,
yeah. Oh. Yeah, you need them for vitamin, you know, you need, they can be harmful, but you also need them to actually make staff, as an example, make certain vitamins, process them.
Right. Okay, are we recording now? We can go?
Yeah, we're still recording. We'll just have our tech guy cut all of this out.
Okay. So E. coli is definitely a part of our vitamin production, just like staph, strep, listeria, clostridium. We need them to survive, but they also, they harm us when they're pathogenic or overpopulated. So
Yeah, go ahead. Make your point.
No, that was my point. I mean, we need them. They're our friends.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. So they can be harmful. They can be, you know, obviously we need them, you know, and I think that's, you know, really a new understanding of these things. I think after World War II, you know, we were, with the advent of antibiotics, we thought, man, we're going to just wipe all these things out and we're going to live happy forever after. We've learned far more than that now. Okay, so here's the question I have. I mean, if I was watching this show, I'd be like, okay, great, you know, but how does that affect me? You made one comment that I think does, that look, you believe that almost all illness, if not all, starts organisms, right? And myself, I had mercury upstream. I became polluted with mercury, yes, and I ended up with microorganism problems, you know, infections that were allowed to take root. Kind of explain that more, because there's people that are watching this, they're looking for answers, right? So how is this an answer for them?
Microorganisms are a key component to chelation. They're actually taking the heavy metals, the petrochemicals, and they're actually getting them out of our body, digesting them out of the body. That's part of the natural chelation that our body actually has, its own chelation system. It's mm-hmm. the opposite of digestion, where digestion is elements coming into the body, where chelation is the stuff going out of the body that we don't need or that's not good for us, or metabolic waste, you know, getting transferred out. And for, because most people's digestions are not working very well, and they definitely are short on minerals because our food chain is deficient of minerals. It's been that way for a solid 100 years now. And the microorganism population is definitely out of balance just because of all the chemicals and the radiation and all the other things. So now we have this big imbalance on for the chelation system to work right. So you have to put the microbes in order to have that part of the chelation system working right. They're like little Pac-Men going around the body, eating up all the bad stuff. So you said you had mercury. Well, that's when you have heavy metals, certain microorganisms will be prone to digest certain minerals or certain metals. And then they get overpopulated. And if your body's immune system isn't able to handle the or to keep them in a balance, then they go pathogenic. And then we have these infections.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. That is absolutely true. You know, so therefore, you know, I think both of us, we've watched the rise of the probiotic craze. And I believe all of us here would realize, okay, you're not going to fix this problem that you just stated, probiotic. So Will, you know, what did you do, right? I mean, you talked about your story. What did you do to become more in balance with the microorganisms, you know, around us in our environments?
I went on a hunt for as many as I could find. And because
let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, in the store, when you say probiotics, you're getting a very limited scope of this huge thousands of strains of microorganisms that are on us and around us all the time. And so in the store, you're getting these colonizers, your acidophilus, your bifidus, your bifobacterium. You're getting this small, what's called colonizing microbes. They're the ones that you can easily ferment, like in kimchi or making cabbage into sauerkraut or yogurt. Or, you know, there's about, what is it, about, I think there's 18 to 20 strains or something like that. Okay, well, there's this whole other reality called soil-borne organisms. They don't multiply very easily outside of their natural environment in the environment. So I went on a hunt for them because it was like, you can't find them. You know, a guy, there's some products out there now. I think you can probably get about 30, maybe 35 strains that are available, that's readily available that you can find. Well, I went hunting for these other, I found 500, a little over 500 right now that we have available. The problem is commercially, they're a little volatile. That means they die easily. So they're not really easily to commercialize. So that's been a really big problem. And so we've been working the bugs out how to get these, keep them alive, and get them to the, you know, whether you're taking them orally to help your health or in the soil or in your beehive. So keeping them stable and alive to their end use. That's been the challenge, and we're doing pretty good with that. So we have a little over 500 strains that are in a non-pathogenic form. They don't go pathogenic at all. They're totally friendly with each other, and they enhance whatever environment they go in, whether it's in your gut or in the beehive or in the soil. They're doing their job. And so that's where we are today with, we're about a little over 500 strains.
So, I mean, do you have it in a single product right now?
There's about, I think, eight or nine products to keep stable and for doing different things. And these are all different strains. I don't do colony counts because I had a lady a few years ago, and this really, it was like a shocker to me because I didn't realize it at the time. This lady was sick. And she had all the symptoms of, like, you're familiar with candida. She had candida infection, right? Well, but candida wasn't showing up on any of the tests. Acidophilus was showing up on the tests. I'm like, wow, okay. So I asked her a question. I said, oh, so where are you getting acidophilus? You're obviously having an acidophilus infection, which has almost the same symptomology as candida or any of the candida family. And I'm like, so where are you getting? Oh, she goes, I'm taking 52 billion CFUs, coliform units of acidophilus, in pill form every day. Plus I'm doing yogurt. Plus she was doing like four different things. And I'm like, stop all of it right now.
Created a monoculture.
Oh, she created her own infection with the acidophilus. And so in 3 days she called me back and she said, I feel like $1 million. Well, and that was a shocker to me that she actually gave herself an acidophilus infection. And since then, I've come across that almost monthly with new people. It's that, because in the natural health industry, they're telling people that you need to take, you know, eat yogurt every day. You need to eat your fermented cabbage and all this other stuff. And they're actually giving themselves infections by taking in so many colonizing bacteria it's crazy right now.
And that's the first thing, one of the first things I do is take them off their probiotic. You know, how long have you been on this? A year, 2 years? Yeah. Like, okay, get off of it. So what did you do before you had these isolated? I mean, you know, your, you know, journey to health. I mean, how are you changing your microbiome? How are you changing your microenvironment?
I follow our technology that we have right now is we have computers that actually are able to talk to the body to tell us what, you know, they're telling us what microbes are stressing us, what heavy metals are stressing us. So I pretty much follow my protocols based on the scan reports that when the computer talks to your body, it gives you, you know, what supplements to take. And so that's how I pretty much follow it. That way I'm always on top. So I'm never really causing any infections, first of all. And I'm also seeing, like, this, I was kind of bad over the holidays, like a lot of people have been, and I ate a lot of stuff I shouldn't have. And so I have belly aches and things. And so I noticed this year especially, that I did a scan and I had some significant imbalances, because this is the first year in over a decade that I was not very careful about what I ate and was pretty choosy. I usually been really passionate about what I eat. And this year I was like, nah, it's been so long. I'm just not going to, you know, worry about it. I'm just going to have fun. So I had some imbalances that I created just by eating things I normally don't eat. And so I had a scan the other day and I noticed I had some imbalances. So I just take what the computer tells me to take. Really, it's that simple. It takes the guesswork out of it.
What kind of scanner is it?
Okay, so you're familiar, it's Galvanic Skin Response is what we use, is one of the scanners. We have two technologies. One's Galvanic Skin Response and the other one's Cybernetics, which called a cyber scan, where the GSR, Galvanic Skin Response, is actually where the computer is talking directly to your body. And the cybernetic scan is where you send a sample in, or you put your hand on our, in our device, and it reads your energetic print, I guess is a easy term. It's a lot of technical stuff, but where your computer's interfacing with your sample, a biological sample, and to see what's going on energetically in your body.
I don't want to get too far off on another. Yeah. But I am curious. Because I've tried so many of those different technologies, and you know, I like to test things, then retest them 10 minutes later. Can you get an accurate thing? Who developed it? How does it differ from the DEXA scan? Those types of things,
The GSR scan actually was created in 1924 as a lie detector technology, and then NASA and the military, since the late 50s, early 60s, they've been using it to monitor body functions with the pilots and astronauts. And even today, Microsoft uses the same technology. Really, it's where they interface with your, they got these watches now that are connected to your phone, that are connected to your computer. It's just really measuring your electrobiological chemical responses on your skin. It's really simple, really, except that the software that we use has been modified, paid a bit of a price to have a modified software. And then the cybernetic scan is fairly new. It's been around since the 90s. And we have the latest version. We were just over to Germany last year to see it in action and actually to buy it and bring it back to the States. There's not a lot of people here in the States with this technology. And so it's using the advanced Tesla coils to do the reading and also to imprint to the corrective frequencies into the carrier fluid, and you're actually consuming the information, the corrective information. So it's advanced homeopathy in a nutshell, really.
Yeah, you wrote a book. It's basically the underlying cause of the unconscious. Okay, what's the underlying cause? I think I know. But what's the unconscious conspiracy? That would be the better question.
Well, yeah, a friend of mine came up with that title, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. Let's go with that. the unconscious conspiracy, it's unconscious to us that there is a conspiracy in this country, especially in this country, really to keep us ill. Medicine in general, you got academia, you got everything here that in this country to support illness, not vibrant health. You've got academia in general, the mindset in general is so like unhealthy. We have social engineering here that just living in this country can make you ill. I've got that with people from other countries to come into this country, and by just living here, there's I hate to sound such a doom and gloomer, but the health is dependent on our society, as well as not only food we eat, our attitude, our environment, taking it all into consideration. In this country here, we have over 80,000 chemical compounds that have been released into the environment alone, just on a toxic chemical level. We have open atmospheric nuclear testing that's taking place still to this day. Right off the shores of Hawaii last month, there was nuclear detonations and nobody knows about it. We have all this stuff around us that is not supporting our vibrant health. I believe that's the unconscious part of that I'm talking about in there, is that we're just not aware as a people, as a society, that all this stuff around us that is so unhealthy for us, but yet it's still here. That's the unconscious that I'm talking about.
I mean, I'll play the devil's advocate on, because I mean, I agree with you. These things are there, right? But isn't it just about, hey, a lot of these people believe in their agenda, right? I mean, I met, you know, top people in Monsanto, man. They really believe in glyphosate. They really believe in GMOs. They really believe, right? And isn't it at a certain point just about money? Or do you believe that really they're trying to kill us?
No, I think it's about the money. I don't really see, because I like you, I've met people in, I've got clients that used to work at Bayer and Monsanto and Ciba Geigen and in the pharmaceutical industry, and they're just doing their thing. I don't believe there's an agenda to kill us outright like that. There may be some things, yes, but I think overall, the people in general, that's not their agenda. They're just doing their job. They're just trying to live.
Yeah. That's why I was just gathering what you meant by that. But so, you know, I mean, so you do talk a lot about, I mean, you're the elect, they call you the electrician of the body, correct? I mean, isn't that one of the terms?
I call what I do that. The Body Electrician Foundation, actually, you know, but that's my focus, is over the body, the electrical system of the body, the energy of the body, because without that electrical energy, we're just a sack of bones and meat.
Right. So let's go there. I mean, you know, because, you know, that's the testing that you spoke about. And so how do the microbes affect that then? Because that's obviously part of your study. It's part of what you're speaking of here, is how it disrupts our health, period.
It does. And I have an analogy that was given to me by Dr. Carl Oppenheimer, who I consider the father of bioremediation, by the way. But he was really shared a lot of information about microbes. And this is the non-academic information that he really didn't promote in any of his papers or anything. But this was on an energetic level, which made sense to me. He says that the specific microorganisms hold specific bandwidths of information let me back up just a little bit. So we're swimming in this field of energy, like fish swim in water. We're in the air. We don't have water around us, but we have this information field all along, the quantum field, the whatever you want to call it, the information field, the etheric field. To me, it's all the same. But our health, cellular health, our metabolic health, our mental health is dependent on these microorganisms being in balance, this broad diversity of them, because each strain of microorganism holds a specific pathway of bandwidth to the information to help our body to keep us healthy and alive. And when we don't have that microorganism, we lose that pathway to the information. And now we're devoid of that particular bit of information. So without the microbe, we don't have access to that proper information. That's what Carl told me. And Carl's to me, it only makes sense, because if we don't have these microorganisms in balance, when we have infections, you don't feel good. Your immune system can't function. So I'm aligned with this thinking just on a simple level.
How much of it is, you know, I mean, we know that you need certain bacteria to produce certain white blood cells. You need certain bacteria to produce certain T regulatory cells that, you know, tell our immune system it's okay. You need certain bacteria to produce certain brain chemicals, so to speak. How much of that, okay, I mean, that's, you know, that's DNA, that's microorganisms specifically talking, you know, to our cells. How much of it is that, and how much of it is just the pure energy that's missing for those exact signals?
Boy.
You know, because there's two things going on here. There's a physiological communication, so to speak, and then there's the energy communication, and obviously a combination.
Well, without the microbe, you lose the pathway, period. So you're just like cutting a wire.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what I'm asking is okay, we have bacteria certain bacteria to make certain immune cells, and it happens epigenetically, right? I mean, in communication with ourselves, you know, and then you're talking about a whole nother line of thinking as far as when that particular microbe is missing, now we don't have a communication of energy into the system. You know, where's the balance? How much sickness is from this versus this? It's theoretical.
How much? I don't have a number. I don't have a number, but I can tell you though that without the microbe, you lose that chemical. Your hormones are distorted now. Your chemical mixture now is missing this particular atom or whatever, and you now have a mutated or a distorted function happening, and that's the decline of illness, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just trying to get a broader vision, I guess, or a more focused vision on how the energy actually affects our cells. You know, does it affect the epigenome? Is it just a signal of information that we quite don't understand? You know, is it talking to cells, not even in its proximity? I get a better understanding of what that actually means for our viewers.
Well, we'll go down to that gene expression like you're talking about. I think I'm understanding the question. Without the certain microorganisms, certain genes don't get expressed, or certain genes do get expressed without the microorganisms. So epigenetically, without the diversity of cells, or excuse me, the diversity of the microorganisms, then the genome then is compromised just on its face, because we're dependent on our gene integrity is dependent on the diversity of cells.
No doubt. Yeah. I'm not an energy guy. Right. And that doesn't, I'm very curious though, because I have an interest here, especially in the last year. So how much of that is the energy, or how much of it is literally other signaling molecules that the bacteria give off to communicate with our actual cells to make certain neurotransmitters, white blood cells, etc.?
Well, there's, I love this question. I have to think, my mind's got to slow down.
Well, I have questions that my brain thinks, you know, and I, you know.
Well, have you read any of Joe Dispenza's stuff or Bruce Lipton's stuff?
Yeah,
you may have to, okay. Well, just our belief alone can interfere with the information, even if the microorganism is there. So now we have this whole intertwining of not just microorganisms. I mean, if you're missing particular mineral, you're going to have the signal's going to be interrupted on the energetic side of it, not the physical, but just the energetic side of it. We also need the minerals to carry the bandwidth of information as well. So here we're going to get into the complicated stuff maybe a little bit. Here's where I believe you have to have a broad diversity of minerals and microorganisms. So to have the information or the energy to be traveling from cell to cell, from, you know, inside to outside, to make all of our functions right. So here's where the holistic picture starts to get a little bit more bigger and complicated. Because it's not just about the microbe, you know, it's the whole bigger conversation.
Yeah, I mean, our thoughts, right? Like you said, I mean, listen, our thoughts can trigger certain chemicals in our brain. Those chemicals in our brain will trigger certain effects physiologically in our microbiome, in our cells, right? We can create inflammation in our cells via our thoughts, via chemicals to our cells, or we can correct it. You know, so that's biology of belief as well, right? So,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, how much of it is physiological because of our thoughts create chemicals create reactions, etc. How much of it's straight energy? I don't know that we know, you know, I mean, that's why I'm always interested in these thoughts. But all right, you know, Meredith, I know you have a lot of great questions because we talked about them in the front of the show. So I want to get the most out of our viewers from this. You know, I mean, I want to know, you know, I mean, what can they do? I mean, even you know, getting dirty. I want to make sure they take this show and say, okay, here's what I can do from this show. But go ahead, Meredith, because some of your questions were aligned with that.
Right. Well, yeah, to follow up on that, I think first things first. So like, what are some action steps that we can take? There's this amazing information on microorganisms and how they can affect us for better or for worse. So, you know, putting aside the scans, what can we start to do to optimize our relationship with microorganisms, you know, with our diet, maybe what we put on our skin, you know, the type of air we breathe, the type of water we drink, how can, you know, if you can kind of break it down into those categories for some action steps on what we can do to have the best, you know, type of balance with these microorganisms as possible.
Well, I start everyone that comes to us off a couple of main thing is diet. Okay. The main thing is diet for me. That's the foundation, fundamental, right off, because you don't want to eat things that are going to be causing your blood sugar to be rising, because anything that creates a high, too high of glucose levels in your body is going to be feeding these microorganisms. And I looked at your diet a little bit. Mine, I'm a little bit more rigid. I mean, I'm a no grain, no nut, no seed at all. That's me. And I recommend doing that for a time, especially if you're coming to us ill.
Is that just because of the bad glucose response that some people might have?
Well, that's one of them. The other thing is it really messes with our blood chemistry, because the natural chemicals that are in grains, nuts, and seeds actually cause our blood chemistry to go very acid. And really cause a lot of metabolic problems. It causes problems with the endocrine system in general. Reproductive organs take a hit with grains, nuts, and seeds. And there's so much information lately that's come out. You got grain brain, you know, you got grain damage. These are titles of books. There's wheat belly. There's all this other information about grains and how detrimental they are to people. To mammals in general. And so that's the first thing, because if you're going to be feeding these microbes glucose, high glucose, or anything that causes a glucose increase, you're going to then have a hard time bringing them into balance, because the opportunistic ones, they're going to be in there just eating away. And that's your E. coli, Salmonella, Staph. They're right there on the front lines in your gut, and they're going to really go pathogenic quickly. And so for me, you know, I'm down to the fruits, vegetables, and animal products, and in the highest quality in the naturals form as possible. That's my dietary recommendations for people that come to us. And if you can, I know a lot of people have this lactose intolerance issue right now. And if people really get that, lactose intolerance is a result of eating grains, people would really change their view of things. And that's my opinion, and how we address things, because we help people recover from lactose intolerance. And the main enemy to lactose intolerance, the main cause of lactose intolerance, is we got to get these grains, nuts, and seeds out of the diet, because they're actually harming our enzyme production.
We interviewed probably all the authors there that you spoke of, right? And you know, we have recently interviewed Dr. John Dillard. Dillard, am I saying that right?
Dillard.
Yeah. She speaks French, by the way. Anyways, you know, and he makes the argument, and I'm not, how do you answer to this? He makes the argument that for 3 or 4 million years, we have evidence of people eating grain. Eating it in the last, 10,000 years, et cetera. But, you know, so is it the grain? Is it what man has done to it? Has anything changed? And he also believes it's a weak digestion that enables us not to be able to eat grain. What's your thoughts on that?
I love this question. I had two anthropologists, one I got to be a personal friend of, and he taught anthropology, the history of societies, for 42,000 years or something. He taught at Queen's University in New York. And I asked him that question. I'm like, so when is this evolution happening with grain? I mean, he goes, it's relatively new. It's only eating grain the way we eat it now is relatively new on the evolutionary scale. They ate grain in the past. They never ate it dry ground. They never ate it roasted. They never ate it the way we eat it today. Like cereal, for instance, or bread the way we make it today. What was bread 5, 10, 15,000 years ago, took 14 days to make it. They actually had a fermentation process of three different fermentations over 14 days that actually, using microbes again, fermenting this doughy substance three different times, actually to disable all the harmful chemicals and all the harmful effects of the grain. And it took 14 days. Nobody does that now. They just grind it, and then they make stuff out of it. It's not, so what we're calling bread today is nothing, literally nothing like what they had bread, 10,000 years ago. And then the genetic structure of the grain itself you raise grain now. Now the grain nowadays is raised to be high in certain elements. It's been modified. And just by having a deficiency in the soil, you're going to cause a deficiency in the plant. So the last 100 years of raising crops the way we're raising crops has actually created a very deficient, nutritionally deficit product just on its face.
Well, what about incorporating the fermented foods into the diet as well? How do you incorporate those?
I say moderation, because like I was saying earlier, the people are overdoing it. Fermentation in general was never a health advancement. It was a preservation of food so you could have food on into the next year. It was never fermented year round like this. People are actually doing, you know, too much in my opinion, because we're seeing acidophilus infections like crazy. Ultimately they're eating too much, colonizing microorganisms in with the food that's actually causing their own body illness. So I think people are overdoing it, and the evidence is people are coming to us with acidophilus infections. So I say, you know, people need to like be a little bit smarter about it. You can't overdo it. Mm-hmm. Moderation again.
Yeah, you know, actually another big player in that is the kombuchas, right? I mean, we people are drinking those things like wildfire, and most of them have very similar same bacteria. So you're right. I mean, not to mention everyone's on their darn probiotic and then they're drinking their kombucha. It goes right down the list. So yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm.
Small amounts of kind of varied fermented foods seem to be the best bet.
Well, you have to get some soil organisms in there, because without the soil organisms, the fermented food, the colonizing microorganisms don't have a buffer. They keep each other in check. So most people are let me back up just a little bit. The soil organisms are there, or used to be, in our food all the time, but because of industrialization and storage and cooking, and these microorganisms now are not in our food anymore. They're not in our food chain, a lot of them anymore.
Well, glyphosate alone destroys them, right? I mean, not to mention the poor soils. I mean, a zillion reasons, environmental chemicals for that matter. Meredith, I have to ask you, do we have any of his product on Rev Health, the soil organisms?
No, not yet. So Dr. Will, you'll have to share how our viewers could access that.
Oh, sure. You want right now?
Yeah, no, we would love to carry them. Revelation would love to carry them. I would love to be able to tell people to, you know, try some of these different soil organisms. So I'm asking the question I think our viewers would ask.
Yeah, I'd love to entertain that with you guys. Sure, we can do that.
Great. I'm just curious too, like earlier in the show, you had mentioned that one of your clients had all of these different candida symptoms, and then you realized it was an acidophilus infection. How would someone know, maybe who's watching, if they're like, what symptoms they could look out for to possibly have an infection because they've been eating too many different fermented foods and have an imbalance of microorganisms?
It's you can look at the candida information out there. All the different symptomologies for candida are almost exactly for acidophilus. You know, you can have bloating, gut issues. You can actually have skin breakouts with acidophilus. I've got a lot of girls that wear very tight shirts, or the bras are very tight, and they get a little bit of skin itchiness and infection, or, you know, rashes or whatever on their skin under their bra line. Feet, believe it or not, kefir shows up on feet a lot. Just the kefir, because I see more than even acidophilus is the kefir. I don't know if your viewers are into kefir a lot, but a lot of people that come to us, they're actually overdoing the kefir, and they're again same symptomology as candida and acidophilus. So there's about 200 plus strains of microorganisms that have almost identical symptomology as candida.
Interesting.
Wow. All right. So with diet, okay. So we clarified that. Now, what about in our air and our water, how we can kind of optimize the microorganisms in those spaces?
Wow. How about the air? So how about, have you heard of Dr. Judy Mikovits? No, you should check her out. In 2013, she was the former head of National Institute of Health. She'd be a great one to have on your show, by the way. She actually came out in 2013 and said that all microbes are airborne and vaccines cause autism and that the whole entire blood supply of this.
I have heard of her. Yeah, I know who you mean now.
You've heard of her? Okay, well, so you got to realize that all these microbes are airborne. And that's my point when we're talking about this is so we're breathing them in all the time. And this is where our environment of our home really comes into play, because this whole black mold conversation in our home is important. Our environment, right. Our house can poison us. This is called sick building syndrome.
I see it all the time. People's mouths in their homes poison them.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's important. And if you got mold anywhere that you can see in your house, whether it's a little bit of black, green, blue, red, whatever color, it sporulates off into the air, and you're breathing this stuff. The mycotoxins, we're breathing the mycotoxins. So it's very important to, if you got a leak or to take care, especially in the wintertime. I used to live in Las Vegas, and actually Las Vegas is one of the moldiest places you'll ever live in the wintertime.
The HVAC systems.
Or in the summertime, because their houses are closed up all the time, almost year round. And you have circulating air that you don't get fresh air in the house, and mold loves that. And the condensation builds up in your house. So really taking care of your environment and keeping that mold out of there you have to do that, because we're breathing that in.
Shows on that, of course, and you know, ERVs, energy return ventilators, you know, just bringing in constant fresh air. It's the way we're building homes, we're sealing, of course, it saves our bill in the winter, right? But problem is, we're trapping in chemicals, we're trapping in humidity, we're trapping in mycotoxins, fresh air, and circulation. So, you're 100% right. Listen, a lot of the clients that I have that are mysteriously ill, can't figure out, can't balance their hormones, you know, it literally comes down to they're exposed or being exposed to mold in some aspect. So bad stuff. Yeah, really bad stuff. And it does. It disrupts the microbiome in them so dramatically. You know, it's so sad. And again, it's an epidemic. It's really sad.
We're able to see it now because Staphylococcus and penicillium and, you know, trichophyton, these are just naturally occurring microorganisms that black mold or blue mold, or those are the simple names, but we're able to pick these strains up that are in us. We're having Aspergillus infections in our lungs. We're having Aspergillus infections in our digestive system. And it's mostly from our environment, because our environment is just overloaded, like in our house or our place of business.
Well, you know, and I've had clients that, you know, they go to their doctor, they have breathing issues because of mold exposures, and they do a regular scan and say, you're fine. You know, and, you know, it's sad because they don't understand, you know, this, and it really is a growing problem. I mean, it really is. And I'll tell you, it's not just the mold that you see, because most often you don't see it. That's the problem. Right? It's like, and by the time you don't even smell it anymore, you know, because you're just, you're used to it. You're sensitized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've done a number of shows on that as well. If you're thinking that your home possibly has mold in it, the ERMI test, ERMI, is a good one to check for mold in your home. And that ventilation is so important for getting that fresh air, and just kind of like having that on a regular basis to get the fresh air in, especially during the winter time. I definitely open my windows periodically as well, just to air out my space, just to keep it kind of cleansed. But all right, so, and then finally about water, can you kind of talk about how we can think about what we should be drinking as far as water and just our water quality in general, even what we shower with, how that the microbes and the microorganisms in water affect us and how we can optimize that?
That's a big question. Water in general. We haven't really biologically evolved a whole lot in the last say 1,000 years, say 5,000 years. And now we have industrialization right now that's really, really infringing on our processes. We have water that's really, it's wet. It's a lot of it is so full of industrial waste. And the chemicals, especially if you're living in a municipality that treats their water, just the sheer treatment of the water, not even the fluoride, just the other treatments that they do the water is very, it's caustic. It's just not good. We have acid rain. We have all kinds of stuff coming out of the air that's in our natural water. I travel 40 miles to a spring in the mountains to collect water, which is really good water, but yet there's still stuff in it.
Right.
I'm not a proponent of distilled water, consuming distilled water, or reverse osmosis. Yeah, it's cleaner, but it's stripping our body. It's a very heavy chelator because it's lacking all the minerals and stuff. It's been stripped, so it's a heavy chelator, and I've seen too much damage from it. So I don't promote drinking that. I mean, my mom killed my fish when I was a kid with distilled water. She didn't know any better. You know, there's no life in it anymore. And we're not just drinking to put water into us. There's more than just a fluid that we're putting into us. That's part of life force. And so structured water is definitely, there's a lot of different structured water devices out there nowadays. Most of them are really good. They're putting the life force. They're moving the water like a natural spring through their device. So they're creating the structure of the water to be more like it used to be. And so, because our body is not just getting the H2 and the O out of that water, we're dependent.
Yeah, seeing more of that. You know, they run it through an RO, and then they run it through these things that restructure it. How do they measure that? How do we, you know, I'm such a skeptic at heart. How do they look at it and say, okay, yeah, that is a different molecule, and then we know we're actually ingesting something different?
Okay, so it's really simple. If you got a fairly sensitive multimeter, literally, you can check the voltage in the water. Okay, here, I did this a couple of years ago with a friend of mine, the owner of PresidentWater.com, who manufactures these. And we were doing a little testing here at my place, and we were testing the water because we have municipal water here. And it was actually a negative voltage, meaning it had like a dead short in it. It had a negative voltage, meaning you consume negative water, it's going to take life force from you. It's not going to give you. And so he ran it through his device that was about 7-8 inches long, and it had a 400-fold increase. So it went from a -2 to over a +2. So just by taking the water and running it through a magnetic field and crystal marbles and whatever else is in there, it actually reversed the polarity of the water to a positive and actually put the life force back in it just by running it through a solid state device. So you can take a millivolt, a voltmeter that can measure millivolts, and you can measure it before it goes into the device and after it goes through the device and tell us right there. That's plain and simple.
Great. No, that's great. I'm glad you answered that. Thank you.
I was curious too, just with the reverse osmosis water. I have an RO unit, and I thought that if I kind of put the pink Himalayan sea salt in the water, that it would replace those minerals that have been stripped from it. But you're saying that that's not adequate.
Well, there's more to it. That's great that you're doing that. You have to put, because that's what electrolytes are. Electrolytes are minerals, salt minerals. And by putting that back in there, I do it. I tell people to do that. If they don't want to buy our salt, which we're importing salt out of El Salvador, which is one of the cleaner of the salts down on the planet, put some kind of sea salt back into your water, because you need those electrolytes in order for your body to recognize water to hydrate you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
There's two other products out there that I recommend. It's either OxyLift or sea salt. OxyLift or cell salt, cell food. Those two products, I have that in all of my drinking water, and I recommend that to everybody. If you don't listen to anything that I say, put some sea salt, broad spectrum sea salt, and either OxyLift or cell food in your water. Your body will thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. There's a lot there. And I know, Dr. Wiltzer, you live on a farm. So I think just stepping back to, I mean, there's tons we can do with our diet and our air and our water, but also just being in nature and being around dirt and not having to be so clean all the time. I think there's so much there with microorganisms as well, right?
Absolutely. And this whole cleaning fetish is really gone over the top. I mean, you got hand sanitizers at the store. You got them. The doctors got them. You got them. All the that sanitizer, you're actually causing your immune system to go not, you know, to go down, to not work right by putting all these chemicals on you to try to kill microbes. We need them on us.
Yeah.
They're there for a reason. And so, yes, nature, getting your feet out in the dirt. You know, the whole grounding conversation, you know, we are so part of nature that we have to be out there. If you want to be healthy, you got to get out into nature, get out of the concrete and plywood environment outside. That's why most farmers are a lot healthier than most city dwellers, just because they're outside more.
Yeah, well, organic farmers, the other ones are getting sick from glyphosate.
Yes, thank you for that correction.
Yeah, I know what you meant anyway. Well, hey, well, thank you so much for coming on, and you know, what a intriguing conversation. So, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. I really appreciate you asking me to join you today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Will. Thank you, Dr. Pompa. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Hope you have a fantastic weekend, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.